All right. Well, today is December 7th, which is known in our nation's calendar as Pearl Harbor Day. That's right. So no better time to remind you about this book. Some of you who have been here for a while know that in the past I have taught adult Sunday school classes called More Than Conquerors, which highlights famous Christian missionaries like Mary Slesher, or famous Christian businessmen like Cyrus McCormick and John Wanamaker. And each week we've looked at these people from history and seen how they have lived their lives and what they've contributed to the Christian cause. And several years ago, the last time that I taught that, I talked about this guy named Louis Zamperini, and it was from this book on Broken that came out in 2010. I don't know if any of you remember when we talked about this guy or not, but now this has been made into a movie that will be coming out at Christmas. Now, as those of you who may remember this story, this book is an excellent book to read, and this guy was an Olympic athlete for America, became a bomber pilot in World War II in the Pacific, was shot down, survived unbelievably days in the Pacific floating in a raft, was eventually captured by the Japanese and spent 2 years of just miserableness in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. Came home to America, and because of all of that traumatic situation, got into alcohol, his life was just falling apart, went to a Billy Graham crusade and was saved, as Billy Graham was just getting started as an evangelist in the late 40s in California. So it's a really interesting story. So this movie that's coming out the end of the month on this story, because it was produced by Angelina Jolie, I'm not sure how much of the backside of the story where he's saved, where God saves him from the depth of his sin. And I'm not sure how much of that story will be in the movie. So I'm still trying to decide whether I want to go see the movie or not. But I certainly recommend the book to you. So that's very appropriate to talk about on Pearl Harbor Day. The other thing about Pearl Harbor Day is some of you know that our oldest son, Logan, and his wife, Amelia, were expecting a child. And so at 1:30 this morning, we get the call that they were going to the hospital to have this baby. And I am a very heavy sleeper, and my wife is a very light sleeper. So when the phone rings, she is on it 100%, and I am always in a stupor. And so I know that the phone's ringing, and I can hear by the conversation that it's, you know, they're going to the hospital for this baby. And so she says to me, Logan and Amelia are headed to the hospital. They're going to have the baby. And I, in my stupor, at 1:30 in the morning, say, well, that's great. I'll always remember this kid's birthday. It'll be Pearl Harbor Day. Apparently, that was just not an appropriate comment at that moment. So, anyhow. All right. Well, let's get serious about the lesson this morning. Today, we want to look at the financial characteristics of Christian leaders and false teachers. And as we deal with this whole issue of money, and in the past weeks we've looked at how much confidence we have in ministries that we give to, certainly one of the things we need to be conscious of is how the money is used in compensation of the leaders of the ministry. And one of the characteristics that the Bible talks to us about of false teachers is that they are in it for the money. And while there are at least seven different motivations of false teachers that the Bible tells us about, one of those motivations that's sinful is money. And so it is an indicator that we can look at when we're trying to discern if a ministry is okay or not, is how the money is being used. When you see the love of money exhibited by those who have been designated as spiritual leaders, you know that the focus of the ministry is wrong, that the message is wrong, and usually God will not ultimately long-term bless that ministry. Those of you who have Bibles, you can turn to Isaiah 56. We'll start there. Isaiah 56, 9 to 12. In these couple of verses, Isaiah is discussing the despicable habits of the Jewish leaders of the time. They were certainly in it for material gain, and their laziness was on display. And even though these texts are very old, of course, thousands of years old, men are still men. And so we still see this on display in spiritual leaders today. Isaiah 56, 9 to 12. All of you beasts of the field, all of you beasts in the forest, come to eat. His watchmen are blind. The watchmen are the spiritual leaders. All of them know nothing. All of them are mute dogs, unable to bark. In other words, they're not providing the guidance and the care that they should. Just like, what good is a dog who can't bark at an intruder? Second part of verse 10, dreamers lying down who love to slumber. And the dogs are greedy. They're not satisfied. They're shepherds who have no understanding. They have all turned to their own way, each one to his unjust gain, to the last one. Come, they say, let us get wine and let us drink heavily of strong drink, and tomorrow will be like today, only more so. So there's a real cynicism in these false teachers, these guys who are no longer in it for what they should be. Privately, there's just this extreme laziness and cynicism. Boy, we see that in some leaders who are, even today, who are really burned out and no longer ministering effectively. And then another section from the Old Testament, if you want to turn over to Micah 3. Micah 3, verse 5 to 7. This is an interesting section of Scripture. Micah 3, verse 5 to 7 says that false prophets would prophesy peace when they were well fed, but they would talk about war when they were hungry, so that people would pay attention to them and feed them. Certainly the motivation was greed, not a proclamation of the truth. Let's read verse 5 to 7 of Micah 3. Thus says the Lord concerning prophets who lead my people astray, when they have something to bite with their teeth, meaning they have food on the table, they cry peace. But against him who puts nothing in their mouths, they declare war. Therefore it will be night for you without vision and darkness for you without divination. The sun will go down on the prophets, and the day will become dark over them. The seers will be embarrassed, and the diviners will be embarrassed. Indeed, they will all cover their mouths, because there is no answer from God. So what this is saying is ultimately these false prophets will be put to shame. But, you know, there is an ancient text in the Bible that has relevance in America today, doesn't it? Aren't people today doing that very thing? Declaring the worst in order to maintain attention in an audience, just like these guys were. It's really interesting. So this issue of those who are in positions of spiritual leadership who have the wrong motives and the wrong goals is an old problem. And yet it's a modern problem as well. Certainly this theme is picked up in the New Testament as well. And we'll turn to Titus first. If you want to turn to Titus chapter 1. Titus chapter 1, verse 10 and 11. And this is instructions to elders in a body of believers. For there are many rebellious men, empty talkers, and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, who must be silenced because they are upsetting whole families, teaching things they should not teach for the sake of sordid gain. Okay, so what do you take out of those two verses? Is it appropriate to make judgments about the motivation of individuals who set themselves up as spiritual leaders? Steve, what would you say about that? Absolutely, of course. Okay? So, obviously our speech has to be tempered with grace, but there is nothing wrong with judging people's motivations and their ministries and how they operate those and the message they say. Okay, from these verses, it's very clear where to do that. Now, in the modern church, some people would say, oh, you're being harsh. You're being judgmental. You might even be erring to be legalistic. No, no. People who tell you that are just trying to get you to agree to anything. There's a very real role for biblically based evaluation of what others are saying and how they're running their ministry. And we need to be about that. Okay? Not that we set ourselves up as super experts, not that we stand on the hill and we're the know-it-all and people come up the hill and we decide whether they're allowed to be on our mountain or not. No, no, no. Not that kind of prideful attitude. But certainly an attitude of where we're measuring what people are saying and doing against the Bible. Let's turn to 1 Peter 5 for a moment. In 1 Peter 5, the first couple of verses, it discusses several wrong attitudes that those in spiritual leadership must avoid. One is in verse 2 where Peter's warning pastors and leaders not to use their positions to rob people. And verse 3 talks about not using their positions to have undue power. So let's read those two verses. Or let's start at verse 1 of 1 Peter chapter 5. Therefore, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ and a partaker of the glory that is to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God. And here we go, not for sordid gain, but with eagerness. And verse 3, not yet as lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. Now, that's a really interesting thing. So, verse 2 talks about not for sordid gain. What's that phrase mean? sordid gain. It's an old word. You don't see that around much. You don't see sordid gain on many billboards these days. Okay, so there is a concept of this, of greed. And I think, was it Wendy that said there's a sense of dishonesty here? Okay, and that is true. The word, this word that's used for sordid gain, it's an interesting word study. And it talks about not doing things for the right motive. Basically having a dishonest motive for why you're doing things. And certainly that would define false teachers. They're not really in it for the Lord's work to see you improve and to walk with God. They're in it for what they can get from it. So there is a sense of greed, but there's also this sense I want to make sure you pick up of this idea of being dishonest in the way you do things. Now, in a certain sense, that can happen at any occupation, not just occupations where there's a spiritual component to them. I mean, we can do things, we can have any job, any secular job, and we should be doing that as God's child and God's servant in this world. So we can, in a way, work dishonestly at any of our occupations. But it's especially true in these verses for people involved in spiritual leadership, not to have sordid gain, not to be greedy, not to have dishonesty in what you're really about. And interestingly enough, paired with this concept of sordid gain in verse 3 is this idea of lording it over, is the phrase. What concepts are involved there? Well, in view there is the idea of manipulation. Even to some extent, intimidation. And I find it interesting that this is verse 2 and verse 3 of 1 Peter 5. And, you know, I always am so encouraged when the Bible verses just seem to leap off the page into the experience of today. And those two verses do to me. Now, so far, I see they're not doing much for you. But I'm telling you, just look at that. Don't we see that today where those who are in ministry for sordid gain are often ones who are trying to manipulate you to do certain things, live a certain way, give a certain amount of money? That's just very interesting to have those two paired together here in that 1 Peter passage. But notice from verse 3, what are our spiritual leaders supposed to be doing instead of this? What does it say? Being an example. Yeah. Wow. That is 10 times harder than this. Being an example. What does being an example entail? If a spiritual leader is going to be an example, what does it entail? Okay. Okay. Actions. Mm-hmm. Pattern of life. Okay. What else? Joe? Uh-huh. Another hand back here? Okay, so proven, test of time. There's actually a phrase in this, in the Bible for leaders of proven character. I think that's what you're getting at, Dan. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, often what we see is that the people who are doing this, and in a few minutes, we're going to talk about some examples. The people who have ministry and are doing this in America today are very far away from that. So it's interesting that in this verse, chapter 1 Peter 5, verse 3, that there's this real dichotomy between those who are lording it over, manipulation, either trying to get you to give out of fear because of what's going to come, or to give out of fear so that you will be prosperous. Okay, all of those kind of false messages, unbiblical messages. And then these people are not anywhere close to living an example. Of what it really means to live the Christian life. This proven character also has, part of this is leaders who lead by example make very clear their motivation as to why they're leading. Now, if a leader is to lead by example, and if you are wanting to know all of this, you've just told me that this is what you want to know about a leader, a spiritual leader, to know that their example is true. What does that indicate? Can a Christian leader have a very private life? No. And honestly, I think this is one of the things that keeps men from stepping up to be elders and deacon, is that this proper view, and you all have a proper view of this, but a proper spiritual leader has to have what I call life transparency. You all have to know that the men that you have as elders in this church, these guys who were sitting up here last Sunday talking about their lives, yes, they are still in process of sanctification. They still have sin in their life. They still will fail. They still will do things and say things that disappoint you. But you have confidence that you know their lives and you know their motivations and that they're not hypocritical. Okay? And this is very important for proper spiritual leadership. Does that make sense? Have you thought about that before? There are a lot of places and a lot of Christian ministries where the leaders are not this. Their lives are not transparent. And we've seen some famous ones crash. in the past because they've tried to wall off or keep secret or separate part of their lives where they've wanted to keep in sin. And eventually, it all falls apart. If you want to turn back, pardon me, to 1 Timothy 3 for a minute. Let's look at this. As we think about spiritual leaders in the church, there is one of these traits of elders and deacons that are that is often overlooked. 1 Timothy 3, starting at verse 1. It is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work he desires to do. An overseer, then, or an elder, must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnaciousness, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. Well, that's what we started talking about, free from sordid gain or the love of money. But there's several of those categories there that people talk a lot about. Okay, not being addicted to wine, free from the love of money, able to teach. Very little attention goes to that one category called hospitable. What's your understanding of that word? Oh, come on. What's it mean to be hospitable? Claudia, what does it mean to be hospitable? Welcoming, yes. What else? Okay. We normally associate this with what? Having people over for dinner, right? Come on, you guys. This is not rocket science now. Let's go here. Man, you people. Whew. I think I'm like preaching a funeral message or something here. Normally, being hospitable, you associate with, oh, okay. So if I want to be an elder or a deacon, I got to have somebody over every Sunday afternoon for dinner, you know, okay. Well, that's one issue, yes, of being hospitable. But hospitable does what Claudia just said, also has this concept of being open or openness or transparency. So this qualification or sign of a spiritual leader, being hospitable, means that you are opening not just your home for someone to come and visit. That's how we in modern day America define hospitality. But it also means opening, when you open your home, you're opening your life so that people know about you. At times that's uncomfortable. Okay? All of us in our sinful nature have this desire for a whole lot of privacy. I really don't want people to know much about me. I don't really want them to know my financial situation. I don't want them to know the struggles I have in my marriage. I don't want them to know that one of my kids is off the rails and not doing well. I want to keep all of that stuff private. Okay? But that's not really how we are to live in community as believers. We are to know and care for each other. And as spiritual leaders set the example for that, they must be hospitable and have this life transparency. They must live as an example to give you confidence that they are properly leading with the Bible and God as the motivation, not money or power. Okay? This all works together. And last week during that elder panel, for those of you that were here, you know, it's encouraging to me to see guys sit here and be open and transparent and honest about some of the issues they faced in their life and in the past and so on. In this issue of money. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. Now, all of us are. So this deal is not just for those who, in some of your minds, those who are foolish enough to sign up to be an elder or deacon. Okay? This is, all of us are supposed to be striving for this kind of a life. So this is really a mandate for all of us. So you do your own gut check here about how honest or transparent you are with other believers. Okay? Because when you're not open, when you're keeping part of your life sealed off and private, when you're not willing to be honest, okay, it's easy to fall into this kind of stuff. So it's a good check for our own lives. Unfortunately, too many people who are in ministry end up being motivated by money rather than a love for God and a love for God's people. Leaders who are in it for money usually show their hand. And in 1 Timothy 6, since we're in 1 Timothy, if you just want to move over to chapter 6. Again, talking about those who advocate false doctrine, starting in verse 3 of chapter 6 of 1 Timothy. If anyone advocates a different doctrine and does not agree, pardon me, with sound words, those of our Lord Jesus Christ and with the doctrine conforming to godliness, he is conceited and understands nothing. He has a morbid interest in controversial questions and disputes about words, out of which arrive envy, strife, abusive language, evil suspicions, and constant friction between men of deprived mind and deprived of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. Okay? False teachers are always in it for the gain. All right, well, who are some of these false teachers? And there are many of them around the world in Christianity. Actually, it's really interesting when you study this. Probably the worst abuse of this in Christianity in the world is in Nigeria. And as I sit and think of this late at night as I'm preparing these lessons, you know, Nigeria, the church in Nigeria is under severe persecution right now from radical Muslims. And you just wonder what the Lord is doing there and allowing to happen. And the worst abuse with these false teachers, those who are just using the ministry to make literally hundreds of millions of dollars, are preachers in Nigeria. But we have plenty of suspects in America as well. Anybody know any of them? Yeah. All right. We'll call that the previous generation. But that's certainly one of the current ones is a guy named T.D. Jakes. Anybody hear of this guy? You know him? You do? Okay. Donna knows him because Donna's from Dallas, and that's where this guy's from. He has a mega church outside of Dallas called the Potter's House. Okay. He runs, besides this mega church, he has a thing called TDJ Enterprises. It's a multimedia company. He produces films and TV shows, audiovisual type stuff. Okay. You know, net worth multiple millions of dollars, $18 to $20 million. Does not believe in the Trinity. Does not believe in the triune God. Okay. But when you look at his website, it all looks completely clean. Looks like total Christian thing. Another guy from the South. Creefrew Dollar. Anybody ever hear of this guy? Oh, what do you know about him? Seen him on TV, right. Televangelist. What's his message? Okay, it's healing and prosperity gospel. In other words, if you give to him, he doesn't say this in these words, but if you give to him, God will make sure that you are healed of your problems and disease and that you will have lots of money. Okay? He's the senior pastor of this mega church, net worth of $27 million, lives in a home worth over $1 million, drives a Rolls Royce, and owns his own corporate jet. Okay. Another guy in America today, Eddie Long. Anybody ever hear of this guy? Eddie Long? Anybody know this suspect? Oh, you guys are just not out there tuned into all these false prophets. Okay. Eddie Long, pastor of the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church, another mega church in the South, operates a nonprofit charity, called Bishop Eddie Long Ministries Incorporated. In the last 3 years, this nonprofit charity has paid Eddie $1 million in salary, provided him a $1.4 million home, and a $350,000 Rolls Royce to drive. Okay. How about this lady? Juanita Bynum. Anybody ever hear of her? Have you? Okay. She bills herself as a model, a preacher, a Pentecostal televangelist, and an empowerment transfer preacher. Okay? Interesting thing about her, again, lavish lifestyle, net worth in the tens of millions of dollars. Okay? Preaching a wrong message about empowerment. Okay? And her personal life, when we're talking about examples, her personal life is completely unbiblical. Okay, so there's plenty of these people. Now, are the only people who are in it for the money are those who are being paid over $1 million a year? No. So you can have somebody who's making $65,000 who is also a false prophet because they want to keep their job in their denomination, so they keep their retirement accounts, so they will preach a new understanding of the Bible. So it doesn't necessarily mean that only these guys who are these super rich people are in it for sordid gain. But it certainly is an aspect of it that we see in America. Comments or questions so far? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good question, David, about what is our business, how do we view it, and because we are so often motivated by ungodly, fleshly, sinful motivations, when we see our leadership pull in a brand new car in our parking lot out here, the first thought that comes through to our heads is one of jealousy. Okay? Oh, well, he wants us to give to the church. He could have given that to the church and kept driving his old car, something like that. Okay? We're often, I'm not assigning that to you. I don't mean that. But, or the pastor or anything. Yeah, right. But we often are motivated out of sinful thoughts, and they're often motivated by jealousy. So the issue is not really an individual thing that someone acquires. So it's not the fact that, I'm living in a nicer house than you. It's not the fact that I'm driving a nicer car than you. It's not the fact that, I don't know, something else. The issue is, what is the pattern of this guy's life? You know, that's what you have to be looking at. Not these individual things that Satan tries to make a rub between us. So when someone drives in a new car, it's not a big deal. Okay? That's not something you even should take notice of. But what you're after is, what's the pattern of your life? You can be driving a junker, and that doesn't make you a better Christian if the pattern of your life is miserable. And if you're a walled off, non-transparent person within this body of believers. Okay. That's what really matters. And I'm thankful that the men who are on the elder board now, you know, are the kind of men who do have open lives, that I do know they're not living hypocritical lives. And that, yes, they struggle with sin, but their goal is to lead their families and to lead this body of believers biblically. And that's really important. And it's refreshing. And it's not something you find in a lot of ministries. Doesn't make us any better. Doesn't mean we won't have problems here. Doesn't mean Satan can't get in here. Okay? But it's a key factor, a foundational factor in having a ministry that is vibrant and thriving and biblical. Other comments or questions? All right. Next week, I want you to drink more coffee before you come so that you're more engaged and more. We'll be talking about college and this whole college tuition thing and the price that. We'll talk about the prices that some well-known Christian colleges are charging for tuition and room and board and that whole thing next week. It'll be a very interesting discussion. Let's close in prayer.